Chapter 8, The Rules. The first rule of Christian culture, don't talk about Christian culture, particularly its rules. When I was a kid, there sure were a lot of rules. And we had wanted there to be, most of us. Otherwise, who knew what might have happened? Anyone might have just done anything at all. Man, would we have sinned! It all seemed very normal to us. It was all we knew. Mary writes,
"My awareness of exactly how many rules we were living under grew over time, as I learned how many were not in the Bible per se, but were added by my parents or the older brothers or whoever. The more I learned to look at things in context, the more the rules that were written based on a single phrase in one verse started to fall apart too."
Carol says,
"I was not particularly aware that there were a lot, because I had no other quantity with which to compare living in such an insular environment. I just accepted the whole shebang, hook, line, and sinker. Kids do tend to, don't they?"
We'd all had a very deep fear of chaos, so we had rules, but they'd not been written down at all. Even so, they had all somehow been passed down to us. We had known exactly what had been expected of us. We had known exactly what earned brownie points and what looked bad. And we hadn't had a clue exactly how we knew all of this. It was like magic. We would never have thought to call it indoctrination, though we certainly hoped that meeting was putting doctrine into us. So in my 20s, I wanted to define exactly what all of these expectations were and work out what was behind them. I had programming, and I didn't even know what half of it was. And I wasn't content simply obeying without understanding. I was equally not content with rebelling randomly and unthinkingly. I wanted to figure it all out, to take a long, hard look at what the rules were, what was being done to us when we didn't follow them, and stuff like that. So I started to focus on our culture and the many ways in which it constricted and deformed what otherwise would have been the natural shape of our lives. And I started to look for superstition and irrational inconsistency in all of their forms. This made a lot of adults very annoyed with me, because in most cases, they'd not had a look at much of this themselves. Rules were things it was both gauche and immature to mention, but also fatal to break. They were superstitious about thinking about their Christian practice. I've had more than one person claim outright that absolutely nothing that Christians do is ever done out of superstition. Scriptural Christianity is what we do. Superstition is what uncivilized savage cultures and flaky New Age people alike do, not us. Ours was a system that mainly worked with you know, and we really did. But how did we know? How do you bind entire generations of human beings to strict cultural structures without ever actually overtly admitting what all those limits ever really are? It was when I was an adolescent, feeling the full weight of adult suspicion and distrust as to our youthful energy and enthusiasm on me, that I first started to really notice all of the inconsistencies, both in practice and logic, as to these rules, unwritten and, to a large degree, undiscussed. And the adult reaction to my searching was generally, I'm sure you think you're smart seeing inconsistencies. Thing is, we've all seen those and backed away because what's the alternative? The system has to work, and so we make it work. And you don't make a system work by taking it all to pieces like that. Knuckle under and just get along. Stop making waves or go find another system. And no system is perfect, you know. But I didn't listen. Some of the rules were obviously nothing more than North American tradition, neo-Puritanism, prohibitions against whatever was entertaining or new, mainly. There had been huge resistance to the radio and the telephone when they were new, when they were fads mainly embraced by the young. Even in the 1980s, the fact that the radio could be used to make kids aware of pop music was upsetting to parents. Our parents didn't want us using radios to listen to pop or rock music. Our home had no television either, of course, and we weren't allowed to go to the movies. Without the internet, of course, this effectively denied us the decade in which we were young, raised us to be pop culture deaf, kept us from being able to understand much of anything the kids our age were saying around us. Brethren reading early versions of this book have complained of missing the Bugs Bunny, comic book, Star Wars, pop music, and other such references. Whoops! Just like some other people, haven't heard enough King James Version to follow everything. Even the TWist of my proofreaders had trouble knowing what to correct. Sometimes they didn't remember KJV words like divers, for diverse, and let a hindrance enough to see that I was having fun with them. It would be simple to look at this attitude we grow up under as merely a kind of conservatism or technophobia or a view that all that stuff's bad for kids anyway and rots the brain, but I think it went deeper than that. Songs, I noted, were sort of okay until they got too danceable or expressed too much emotion. Black people made music with far too much of all that in it. Too much dance, too much aggression, too much energy, too much sex. Christian songs were criticized in the Victorian and Edwardian eras if the tune was too jingly or commercial, if it sounded catchy, like something someone might hear in a dance hall or slap on the old gramophone. If I tried out music that was thought of as Christian and it was catchy, hooky, or danceable, my mother would say, That's a bit jazzy, though. It was too fun for her comfort. No one ever complained if they were too cheesy and plastic. But jazzy? Several generations after the jazz age, but still feeling that jazzy was a problem. Might make you want to move your body. Might have been a bit of a race thing still lingering on into the 1980s. Brethren kids weren't supposed to listen to Pink Floyd or The Who, but ones who were listening to Michael Jackson or Run DMC, the Miami Vice soundtrack, forget about it. So jazzy. There was a very deep-seated feeling that if you allowed anything too fun in your life, then meeting, the Bible, and prayer would fade out of the picture, having been displaced by the fun. The idea was that Christianity could not compete with pleasurable things, and so it was important to deprive children of said pleasurable things, to give meeting a fighting chance. My mother would shake her head if I'd been reading Batman comics at someone's house. I wasn't allowed to have comics of my own because they were garish. And she'd say, How are you going to take an interest at Bible reading if you've been reading comics? How are you going to keep the kids down on the farm once they've seen Gotham and Metropolis? I can tell you this. When you're a kid and you want more than anything else to read a Batman comic or go to the movie theater and see Star Wars or have a television, black and white would do just fine, and sit down and watch Knight Rider or the A-Team like the other kids, and your parents' emotional response to your liking this stuff is akin to seeing you dancing in the woods by moonlight with the devil, it is pretty much impossible to respect this or them, because you aren't superstitiously terrified of Ghostbusters. You just aren't. So if they are, lols. It just makes your parents look like what they probably are, superstitiously fearful control freaks who feel that the greatest threat to their child's faith is pop culture. In retrospect, these TV shows and comic books were not high art, but the idea that they were going to somehow imperil my soul or corrupt my morals seems laughable now, because it was, and all the kids knew it. I think if my parents had said, You like Batman? I'd rather you read this. Or, You like ABBA, Queen, The Beatles, John Denver, and Neil Diamond? I'd rather you listen to this. It would have been quite different. But there was just, You want what? No, it's not okay. Why would you want that? Because it wasn't just that one could contrive reasons for finding comic books or crappy 80s action shows morally unsound. It was simpler than that. It really was the fun thing. Fun itself was the sore point. Pleasure, in general, loving the things of this world, was a form of betraying Jesus. When I read the Bible now and see words like delight or joy or desires or pleasures, I have to remind myself that the spin being put on those phrases, the tone of voice in which those words were read when I was a kid, was pretty bizarre. I have to remember that the Bible, just because it uses the word pleasure or desire, isn't saying those things are bad. But I'm trained to hear pleasure or desire and picture purest, preening, giggling evil. Tim Curry in makeup, whores and cocaine, comics. You sure can read Bible portions with words like desire in just such a voice as to suggest that desire itself is sinful, as is pleasure, joy, and delight. It's easy. You just read those words with a bit of an oily sneer, or a bit of dire suspicion or funereal disapproval, and you can get across the idea that the Bible is saying that fun is bad, despite the fact that the wording is differentiating sinful desires from other desires, and sinful pleasures with wholesome ones. You can make any desires or pleasures sound selfish, shameful, and dirty with your voice. And start young with kids you want to teach to flinch away in suspicion from the thought of pleasure of any kind. So this distrust of pleasure would show up over and over back in the day. If you showed too much pleasure in anything, someone would very likely have a word to your conscience. They might let you know that it was important not to make an idol of hockey, or music, or adventure books, or whatever it was you really liked, because they'd seen you getting lost in the experience of enjoying the thing, dancing in the woods in the moonlight, having sold your soul to Marvel Comics, the Bengals, Nintendo, or the World Wrestling Federation. They knew it was becoming a problem for you, so they were just kindly warning you that you were getting lost in the thing, that your life was showing signs of heading for shipwreck, that your choices were betraying your lack of wisdom and spirituality, your lack of devotedness to Jesus, because Jesus wouldn't play Nintendo, so why should we? Hockey either.
Blades of Steel
was right out then. The thing is, although I have never derived much enjoyment from hockey, I believe that the guys who were into it for good reasons. It gave them a time and place, activity and group, which all worked together to allow them to throw themselves wholly into something, to get behind it and play full out. I think they were deeply enjoying each other's company. I think they relaxed into the awareness that they were, for once, being permitted to love something. That they'd gotten somewhere where they were finally safe from someone saying they were doing something wrong. They were free while they played. But then people would step up sometimes from among their very ranks to warn of hockey worship, to suggest they were making an idol of something because they enjoyed it, to suggest that actually, rather than fun, they were engaged in a wrong choice of some kind. Melody writes,
I recall believing that if I made a wrong choice, that would somehow wreck the rest of my life and that God would no longer love me.
Louisa adds,
the rules were enforced by coldness, shunning, a look of steel, or in some cases, direct actual words of rebuke, and knowing you would be talked about negatively. Certain personalities were more prone to this, as certain personalities were more prone to be rule breakers.
Mary writes,
the rules were enforced by my parents and the occasional letter from an older brethren woman. I probably exerted pressure on others to follow the rules some in preteen years, but don't remember any specific examples.
Ruth says,
the unwritten rules were in the very air we breathed. I guess we were made aware of them in two ways. The first was not so much in what was said to us as in what was carefully not said. Incomplete sentences, vague hints, disapproving looks, passive-aggressive statements at the dinner table. The second way was worse for a sensitive person like me than being flogged. It was being lovingly taken aside and either rebuked or exhorted or warned or cautioned out of love, depending on the severity of the situation, by people who hadn't taken time and effort to invest in a relationship with you, to get to know you and what made you tick and what you thought and felt. Just the correction machine at work. The common thread of the rules was that everything said and done had to be edifying, profitable, honoring to the Lord, being a good testimony. We couldn't ever go over the top and laugh too hard or enjoy a book or a game too much or sing too lustily. We were always on eggshells, terrified of offending someone. Because if you were big enough in the meeting to get offended, you were the person with the real power. You could bend anyone to your will by being offended. We were made aware of the rules by watching important brethren get offended by things other unfortunate said or did, and we thanked our lucky stars when we weren't the ones who caused that and could avoid that pitfall ourselves.
Like Ruth, I noticed pretty young that having power seemed to go with being offended by more stuff than lesser Christians, kind of a princess and the pea form of piety, as opposed to the workable, industrial-grade stuff that Jesus and Paul had. The ever-growing list of rules helped ease this extremely tender set of sensibilities they contrived. Myself, I mainly just wanted nerdy stuff. Story stuff. Doctor Who, Star Trek, the X-Men, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, stuff that let me explore a world of imagination. And oddly, the Bible was presented to me as harsh reality, the furthest thing from interesting stories that would make me picture memorable things as possible. So the rules that stung for me were the ones that took away the TV and comic books, kept me out of the movie theater, barred me from pop music, and limited which novels I could read. I think the very idea that reading a Batman comic was somehow supplanting the activity of reading the Bible is actually pretty insulting to the Bible. That the two are seen as even being in the same ballpark is quite something, as if all reading is kind of all the same, no matter if done for edification or entertainment. To suggest you could make an idol of Batman once again suggests that a fictional character can compete with God for worship, for actual non-fictional kids to turn to in times of doubt and trouble, to provide divine insight and ancient wisdom. In the Old Testament, the whole idol thing was pretty clear. If you started praying to Baal, if you built an altar to Moloch, you'd literally replace God. I can no longer take seriously the idea that you are becoming an idolater simply by giving some time to Spider-Man comics, which perhaps you could have given to the Lord in reading the Bible, or by enjoying soccer a whole lot when you perhaps should have been enjoying praying to God. There's more to idolatry than just use of your time. Idolatry means you replace the function of the one with the other. I have never prayed to Batman, no matter what was happening. I have never looked to Spider-Man for real answers in my life, nor trusted in Yoda to save my soul from hellfire, or even to make sure pay my bills I could. And I think that's what idolatry would be. Sticking something where God belongs, in my spirit and life, not just in my schedule. Batman and Spider-Man are entertainment. God and the Bible aren't just entertainment, so I don't think we were in danger of making idols of Spider-Man, pop music, and hockey, of entertainment. I sure think you can make an idol of your religious church system, though, of your sanitized, censored lifestyle, of your uniquely correct doctrine. I think you can make an idol of anything that supposedly does what God wants to do for you. I think you can certainly do like the Pharisees and make an idol of your reputation, your church status, your rules. I think you can supplant the Holy Spirit and replace him with legalistic Bible study. The rules we cling to and punish others for not taking seriously tell us an awful lot about who we are and who we think God is.